Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, we go back to the U.S. Senate today for our good martini. Yesterday, we talked about the very narrow confirmation for Betsy DeVos to be Secretary of Education. And now we've got even more good news about a different nomination. Now, this one's not about Jeff Sessions or Tom Price. This is about perhaps an even bigger one, Neil Gorsuch, the president's choice to be on the U.S. Supreme Court. As you write for National Review earlier today, there are now 9 Democratic senators who are on the record at one point or another saying they will give Gorsuch a fair hearing. And they will push for an up or down vote. That includes Chris Coons of Delaware, Dick Blumenthal of Connecticut, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Dick Durbin of Illinois, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, John Tester of Montana, Joe Donnelly of Indiana, and now Gene Shaheen of New Hampshire. You might notice the curious fact that a lot of those Democrats happened to be up for re-election in 2018, several of them in red states. I don't care how they got there. We just hope they give him an up or down vote. Here's Gene Shaheen, though, having a little bit of trouble with reality, but still getting to a good point from our perspective. She says that she hasn't heard anyone other than Republicans talking about any sort of filibuster attempt. But she, as far as she knows, everybody's in favor of an up or down vote.
To suggest that we should not get a fair hearing on the nominee to the Supreme Court, Judge Gorsuch, I think, is just not something that's going to be good for the American people. Unlike the Republican majority, I haven't heard any Democrats saying we don't think that Judge Gorsuch should get a hearing or that he should get an up or down vote. Everybody I've talked to agrees he should get a hearing and an up or down.
Well, Chuck Schumer says he's got to get 60. Jeff Merkley promised a filibuster even before we knew who the pick was. But, Jim, if we're at 9 Democrats, that's more than the number that we need.
Yep. For those of you who can do math at home, or for those of you who can't, it's 52 Republicans plus 9 Democrats adds up to 61 votes, meaning only 39 votes for the filibuster, and the filibuster will be defeated. Now, some Democrats may still want to go forward on this. Now, I put a giant asterisk, and it's not just because of the tradition of putting asterisks next to the number 61, not to irritate Roger Maris fans, but to observe that at any point, any one of these Democratic senators could do what I like to call pull a Cory Booker. And that means when you totally forget everything you've ever said about a particular topic or nominee before, and you completely reverse yourself and you act like you have always been a principal on the exact opposite side you've always held in an effort to ingratiate yourself with the Democratic grassroots because of your presidential ambitions. Thinking in particular of Cory Booker's sudden opposition to Betsy DeVos after speaking at her group's convention at the keynote address at the American Federation, Federation for Children of School, talking about singing the praises of school choice. Now, all of a sudden, Cory Booker hates Betsy DeVos. Similar story with Jeff Sessions, who he co-sponsored legislation with, and, talked about an honor it was to work with him, yada, yada. No, no, no. So on paper, I'm already hearing some people say, well, wait a minute, when I said that, what I really meant was for the cloture vote, not for the, for the full filibuster, et cetera, et cetera. So I, 9 have said this, and it's worth knowing none of these are 9 saying this last time around talking about Merrick Garland or something like that. But still, at the very least, each one of these 9 Senate Democrats, if they do decide to start supporting the filibuster, will have to contradict something they said just in the past, 7 or 8 days, basically from the end of January to now. So it's, obviously, you could argue based on this, the odds for Judge Gorsuch were always pretty good. This looks like it's a, pretty much solidifies it. And I got to be honest, if I'm a Senate Democrat, the argument has always been, you're probably going to see the filibuster get nuked for Supreme Court nominations at some point. The question is, do you want to do it now or do you want to do it for the next nominee when it's not replacing a conservative with a conservative, for lack of a better term, originalist with originalist? Strict constructionist with a strict constructionist. When Kennedy steps down, if God forbid something happens to Ruth Bader Ginsburg or something like that, when there's a opening that's a little bit more of a swing vote or a left vote, isn't that when you really want to pull out all the stops? So we will see how this shakes out. But obviously the outlook for The confirmation of Trump's first Supreme Court pick is looking pretty darn good right now.
Yes, the early stages are very good. We'll see what happens as we ramp up towards the confirmation hearings. On to the bad martini now. And at first, you're going to wonder why this is the bad martini. In the last few days, Missouri has become the latest state to adopt right-to-work legislation. I believe they're at least the second state in this early part of 2017 to do that. Kentucky has done so as well. And so we're now well over half of the states in the United States that have right-to-work laws, which basically means you don't have to join a union as a condition for employment in the state. So that's fantastic news. The problem, as Jim points out in the Morning Jolt today, is that it's not over yet. That's because opponents of any legislation in Missouri, as long as the governor hasn't vetoed it, which Eric Greitens certainly hasn't done here, they can gather enough signatures. Looks like they need about 90,000 to get it on the ballot as a referendum in 2018. And until that actually plays out, the law is on hold. So while Missouri may well still choose to become a right-to-work state, it might take almost two more years for that to happen. So, Jim, good news. Great work by the Republicans in Missouri and a very exciting new governor there in Governor Greitens. But sometimes the wheels of progress grind a little more slowly than we like.
Yeah, the right-to-work advocates thought they were on a really hot streak. They obviously had Kentucky. Previous years had seen big, you know, traditionally big union states like Wisconsin and Michigan passing right-to-work laws. It looks like it's kind of right knocking on the door in New Hampshire. This is a complication because if they get this petition for a referendum, it will put the they wouldn't take effect until they Missouri voters vote on the referendum in 2018. From what I know of collecting signatures, 90,000 is not an impossible number. That's to be in a certain number of congressional districts. If you're a good organized political force, you should be able to go out and get 90,000 signatures. And obviously, you know, the unions mobilized to influence the state legislative vote. And in fact, here's the thing. If they can't mobilize and get the 90,000 signatures, then the unions really were close to death as is, as a political force in Missouri politics. Now, the bigger question is, let's say they get this on the ballot in 2018. Is it likely to pass? Well, the 2016 governor's race was, you know, if not quite a literal referendum on right to work, it was a big issue in the gubernatorial race. And it was definitely a big issue that a Republican governor was running on. Unions were very strongly opposed to it. And that's pretty much, you know, the election was 51% for Greitens, 45% for the Democrats. So you'd think this would pass. You'd think also in 2018, midterm electorate, older, whiter, more conservative, then the odds of that are pretty good. And oh, by the way, just overall, Missouri is very much a state that's trending red. So most likelihood, if this shakes out, it would be a delay of the law, not a total reversal of the law. But still a little bit of a frustrating headache for right-to-work advocates who thought they had just scored a big win.
Yeah, good point. And for those who didn't see what the margin was in Missouri, Donald Trump won that state by almost 20 points. All of our attention, of course, was on the much closer states, but he got about 57% of the vote. Hillary didn't even get to 40%. The Senate and the governor's races were substantially closer. All right, on to the crazy martini now and back to our illustrious president of the United States and his Twitter account. So we've talked about a number of things from the Twitter account, most recently his criticism of the federal judge out in Washington State. That at least had to do, Jim, with actual policy. This one does not. For those who have been following along, and this has probably been a bigger story on social media than actual media, Nordstrom announced in the last few days that they are no longer going to carry any of the clothing and other apparel items on the Ivanka Trump line. Well, the president is not okay with that. And he tweeted at 7:51 this morning, "My daughter Ivanka has been treated so unfairly by Nordstrom. She's a great person, always pushing me to do the right thing. Terrible." I assume he means terrible that they're taking away her stuff and not that she's pushing him to do the right thing. Jim, what do you make of all this?
You know, this is very much one of those ESPN NFL Live moment of, come on, man. You know, President Trump, you put people in a near impossible position to defend you. Look, maybe this only took 10 seconds out of his day or a minute or 2 minutes or something like that. We don't know whether this is Ivanka Trump coming into the Oval Office and saying, "Daddy, look what Nordstrom is doing," or whether she just sends an email griping about it or something. Is it unfair that every business that has ever done work, any work or business with or connection to the Trump family, is now finding itself highly politicized? Yes, it's very unfortunate. Should Nordstrom's or Bloomingdale's or any one of these companies be dropping the lines? I don't think that's good business. But on the other hand, the real question is, are they going to sell? Now, maybe because of the controversy now surrounding the Trump name, it's not going to be easy to maintain a nonpartisan, non-controversial, upscale brand. All in all, I don't really think this is the sort of thing the president of the United States should spend any part of his day worrying about. People arguing this kind of gets into a murky area in which he said he was going to separate himself from his businesses. I don't know if the president's Twitter feed is necessarily a form of it's a much more casual form of communication. It's not a presidential proclamation. It's not an executive order. It's not official. But on the other hand, this is not something we expect from the president of the United States. It might be completely understandable as a father, but when you sign on for the job and 4 years in the Oval Office, you kind of have to put that stuff aside. You kind of have to focus on the job at hand. And the idea that he wants to fight every single one of these fights over Twitter with Nordstrom is just kind of indicates he just does not have the ability to focus that we wanted to see in him. So now, look, hopefully he'll still take care of the big picture and this will get, but he makes it so easy for people to criticize him when he has to have these Twitter tantrums every single day. And I know the Trump fans are going to say, "Jim, you're an anti-Trump guy," because that's exactly how they sound. And again, I just don't see, like, Ivanka's going to be fine, right? Ivanka's going to go out both financially in terms of her professional career. And if they're really wonderful outfits, somebody somewhere is going to be very eager to market to them. Some retailer is going to be very comfortable marketing to the Trump voters who would love to wear an Ivanka Trump dress. So I don't think this is something that needs the presidential attention. And I don't think there's a very good chance of Trump changing his habits. I think we're in for 4 years of this, and it's going to be a lot of political capital spent on what strikes me, and I think a lot of other conservatives, is ultimately irrelevant or less relevant issues.
Well, it was right after Trump got in the race that he had the big fight with Macy's, now the big fight with Nordstrom. So if you see any vague, random tweets about how much he loves JCPenney, you can probably guess that something might be in the works there.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the last kind of question, a closing question, exit question, as they used to say on the McLaughlin Group, Greg. How many people shop at department stores anymore?
In person? Very few.
Right? I mean, like, I was going to say, I walk through the department store going to other places in the mall. That's,
right.
Which probably says a little bit about my fashion taste. But nonetheless, it does strike me as kind of a strange strange battlefield for politics today. But to quote the tweet from Jeffrey Young, he was kind of feeling a little bit like David Caruso in CSI Miami. Just picture him saying, "This is what they call," putting on his sunglasses, "retail politics." and kind of begin the CSI man. That's a good sunglasses moment. We need a way to verbally articulate that moment in every CSI Miami where they cap that opening scene with either an awful pun or something that David Caruso is convinced is so clever and it really is awful, but you kind of groan and laugh anyway because it's so bad. It is the crime scene detective dad joke that I admire. So yes, this is indeed retail politics. I'd like to see the president stay away from this for the next 4 years.
Jim, very good. As always, have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again for the Thursday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.